We asked Flaherty about the media's lack of attention to particularly the elements of racism that were evident in this whole process.
I do think it's important to talk about race as distinct from class in this situation. For example, if you look at the success story of the school system, the so-called success story that's talked about in a lot of the media, what isn't mentioned is that the entire staff of the school system was fired in the days after the storm. And that was almost certainly majority African-American. Their union was one of the largest sources of middle-class black political power in the city. And so that's an example of where this displacement has really disproportionately affected the black middle class. So, you know, it's not just poor folks that have been affected. And I do think that the media has not covered the way race has affected this. And you mentioned that report card. You know, a lot of social justice folks are working on these issues. And I think that that's an aspect I also want to mention, is that there is inspiring organizing. Organizations like Stand for Dignity that works with homeless and other working poor folks in the city. Organizations like Vote NOLA, which works with families of former incarcerated folks to try and build political power for them in the city. To Incite Women of Color Against Violence, who are working especially around healthcare in the city. So there's a lot of important organizing happening here, but the resources, whether from the government or even from progressive foundations, simply hasn't come through, nor has the media coverage.
That was reporter Jordan Flaherty. Before that, we heard A.C. Thompson, Colette Pichon-Battle, and Rosa Brooks.
And you've been listening to Counterspin. The time is 6 o'clock, and this is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. Stay tuned.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the 4th Portland Renters Assembly and their March for Housing Rights. The assembly is on August 26th at the Midland Library from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. There will be speakers on the housing crisis and community organizing, personal stories, large and small group discussion about political strategy, but also defending and otherwise supporting each other. Snacks and childcare will be provided. The march is on August 28th. It starts at City Hall at 6 p.m. with a rally and ends at the Multnomah County Building with another assembly. The theme will be Housing Rights for All and will encompass everything from homelessness to affordable housing to tenants' rights to at-cost public housing. More information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events or portlandrentersassembly.info.
You gotta fight for your right!
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Red Umbrella film series hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the film My Own Private Idaho will be shown Sunday, August 30th at 7 p.m. Directed by Gus Van Sant, My Own Private Idaho adapts Shakespeare's Henry IV story to friends and hustlers living on the streets of Portland. Again, that's My Own Private Idaho at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting an evening with singer-songwriter Carla Bonoff, Friday, September 18th. Tickets and information for Carla Bonoff are available at aladdin-theater.com.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. come marching. So many women dead. We cry through our city, their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs. On the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio program in the country. This weekly show is shared among women-identified radio activists. And if you're interested in getting involved as a host, producer, or engineer, no experience necessary, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes, at volunteer@kboo.org or call the station 503-231-8032. Ani's extension is 213, and we'll announce that at the end of the show as well. Connect with us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, Bread and Roses. There you can access our podcasts, share feedback, and show ideas. And you can like us on Facebook at KBOO Bread and Roses. And we have a new Twitter account, thanks to our collective member, Pamela Santos, my co-host tonight. Mm-hmm. You can access that at Bread and Roses Radio. I'm Leanne Kranz, and as I mentioned, I'm co-hosting tonight with Pamela Santos.
Hey. This is going to be probably one of our most fun shows, I'm very happy to say, just because if you have seen us on Facebook and on the KBOO website, our show tonight is Feminists Watch TV 2, and we're going to have some lively discussion, because when you like something, you tend to be pretty passionate about it, and the same way when you don't like something, as you will hear probably me most of the time talking about something I don't like, you're also passionate about that as well. And we're going to be discussing our perspectives on a number of TV shows using a feminist lens. And in studio, I just wanted to have a little quick welcome for our guest is a local trans woman writer, Nia Nguyen. Hi.
Hello, everyone.
So Nia, we'll be talking about a couple of different shows coming up, but most of what I would say is the running theme for the shows that we picked were anything that I would say has a broadening definition and kind of a wider depiction of what kind of women characters are on TV now. So some of them are Game of Thrones, True Detective, The End of Mad Men, Empire, if we have time, Orange is the New Black, Inside Amy Schumer, and Transparent. And also, aside from some of the scripted shows and comedy shows, there's other reality TV shows. We're going to be talking about that. And we might be breaking a taboo here if we are going to openly admit that our KBOO listeners watch TV as well. So if you want to admit that and listen in, and we'll be talking about reality television, some lessons learned about the female friendships, on some of these shows, as well as the new sort of reality series, I Am Kate. So that's a little bit of a summary of what we got planned. So mostly what we are going to try to have a little bit of time for is a little bit later, just a snippet of an interview that I had with a blogger and activist, Alice Wong. We're not going to be able to play the whole interview with Alice, but we will be having that available on the KBOO website under the Bread and Roses page later on. So that will be all set with us. And now I guess I can get into what we... I will start off with probably the first part of it is True Detective. A little bit of what we talked about with Alice was about, I don't even want to say a little, we were talking a lot about the one character. I kept calling her Lady Coppergina because I couldn't remember her name on this season of True Detective. We talked to, because she is one of the only leading characters who is female on that particular season for True Detective. And a little bit of what we had, I know that definitely Leanne and I had some, I want to say it was really interesting when we're planning this show. I think it's almost, we had 2 hours worth. We had so much that we wanted to talk about, just because to get the opportunity to talk about not only women characters on some of these shows, but feeling like we didn't really have space in other places to talk about it. Not that social media is really kind of the water cooler of yesterday. I mean, we just don't have that chance to deeply discuss themes or how a show or a story kind of touches us more than maybe 140 characters. Would you say?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's a nice way to put it.
So this is our way to at least kind of get to some of the things that we came up with when we're consuming the media. And of course, this being Bread and Roses, having that critical lens that we can apply to that. How do we look at the female gaze here? How are these characters usually written with the male gaze? And that is definitely some of the things we talked about with True Detective.
Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. When Pamela and I started talking about True Detective, the character that everyone is talking about, played by Rachel McAdams, her name is it Annie? Is that how they pronounce it? Annie Bezerides?
So I've been saying her name so many times, and yet if you have to go on the internet and throughout the however many episodes of it, I think she's the only one whose name you kind of remember because it's very long. Bezerides. In the whole interview, I'm just saying Bezerides. But it's more fun because she's really known for two movies, honestly, Mean Girls and The Notebook to me. So I just called her Lady Coppergina. It's faster. But seriously, Bezerides was the only one that had a distinguishable name. Sorry. Nobody else was really memorable.
You mentioned Rachel McAdams' former opportunities to show her acting ability, and this part gave her a lot of room, and it was interesting. What I was wanting to point out is that when Pamela and I started talking about this character on this show, I think we realized we had a generation gap happening. I am Gen X, and you're...
I'm refusing to call myself a millennial. No.
Gen Y,
not
then.
Allowed.
Gen Y. And we
sounds
had a little
like
bit...
Sounds just like a millennial. Hey, I'm sorry. I'm one, too.
Thank you, Mia. Sorry. Well, no disrespect. I was just aware of a way of... Like, for instance, I liked Bezerides. I found her to be like... refreshing, and is because just, I think though it might be a case of when you're really thirsty for a long time and you get a little taste of something, you just really appreciate it. But perhaps from the Generation Y perspective, this character just didn't quite cut it. So can we talk about that a little bit?
This is what's so funny about this is somehow I watched so much TV as a little kid growing up. I remember other lady cops on TV. I remember strong female characters before they became this kind of cliche of different things. And so in some ways, I'm always hashtag unimpressed by these things sometimes because when something is done really well, it hits me. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I was... you know what I thought about it when we were talking was that hearing you talk about it in a way where it wasn't really available in other shows, perhaps. Is that it?
You don't see characters like her every day, yes.
I took a step back.
Women leads.
Did you watch it?
No, you know, I haven't seen the show, and I'm just wondering what is so significant about this character.
Okay.
You know, it's a...
Oh, yeah. This is the most fun ever.
So let's summarize. We'll summarize what each of us felt about this character. She, you know, she did cause a lot of buzz. You know, a lot of people talked about her. From my perspective, Gen X or whatever, it was refreshing to see a woman who was not flaunting her sexuality. She didn't smile once. She kind of half smiled once when Colin Farrell cracked a pretty bad joke.
Oh, do you want me to do
We'll get there. We'll get there. But like, she was just, she was powerful, good at her job, very intelligent, and she didn't take any guff. And she could protect herself.
Oh.
And no, you know, sorry to spoil it for everyone, but the season's over. The end, you know, she is the one who solves the case. She's like the last person standing. She and another woman, actually, all the menfolk, A-list menfolk you would not expect to end up on the pavement, were dead at the end. So, anyway, that's what I appreciated about her. She was different. I'm so sick of women playing that sexuality card at work. That bugs me. And I just think women are beautiful, sexual. They don't have to
be
it's that. Not the forefront of their daily life. And she really embodied that. I know most people in town embody that too, but like, she on TV, it was really cool to see. But you pointed out she was a kind of a puppet for the man.
We're not completely in disagreement about it. It was more that I could see what they were trying to do. So there was this one show writer and runner that pretty much usually writes the whole thing. And for whatever criticism they had about the first season, which was very, you know, got a lot of great reviews. People liked it a lot. The one big criticism was there weren't really good female characters, and if anything, it was like using female bodies more,
fetishizing dead women's bodies, etc.
Absolutely,
and stripper ballet every time you turned around.
It was complete male gaze, and it was everything to service the arc of the two characters, the two male characters.
Buddy movie thing. Yeah,
it's such a philosophical arc of the buddy movie, you know, trope. But this one, they had three detectives and one crime guy, but you could say that there were like four leads. One of them is Rachel McAdams, is the one lady. And I keep saying lady because, okay, so Vince Vaughn's character even calls her at the very end lady cop. I mean, that's why this is so funny. At the end, you're just like, come on, man. He covers it by saying, I meant you're a lady, you deserve dignity. And the reason why I'm making this face that no one can see on the radio is just that the way that it could have been done, it could have been executed better. So that's the only thing that I was thinking, is there was something that they were trying to do to give some kind of backstory and depth to her. And okay, spoiler alert, yes, I might be a millennial. It's that they try to use past child sexual abuse as a way to introduce this.
That's kind of old.
Exactly. That's what Pamela was like. It's an old, they just kind of stuck to that old story.
And that's why she, you know, cuts things up with knives and she's ready to drop a guy, you know, and she has to. But I mean, that's how they introduce her. And this is why this is super funny, because I do like that part of her. And that's the part that we were talking about not being, I want to say, there for the men. Was her first introduction in the show was her fighting, right? I believe it was like her fighting and practicing on a dummy.
Working out, she called it. Knife aerobics.
Thank you. So, I mean, I get it. And it's sort of like, that's why she's all business.
That's how she spends her spare time.
Like, all she does. And even her father issues, her daddy issues, her own father is saying pretty much accusing her of hating men because of whatever issues they have. And it's like, can you not simplify it that way? It just seemed really easy. So that's where I just kind of probably wanted more out of it. And I love mysteries too, so I get
okay. Well, anyway,
I am going to be Debbie Downer on the show.
No.
Oh, no, you're not.
That's what we're here to do.
We've only got through one show.
I know. It's so
what do you guys want to talk about next? Let's get Nia involved in this conversation.
Well, I have to ask. We were talking about, I said which ones we were talking about. Game of Thrones. And originally, we were going to talk about some of the things in that because of, we had a flow to this. This was so funny. This is like jazz on the radio, but we're talking. We were going to talk about the recent season of Game of Thrones and kind of controversial scenes in there. But I hate talking about something where I'm trying to explain it to people who haven't really gotten into it.
Yeah, I haven't seen a single episode of Game of Thrones.
I don't know where I have the time. How do I do this? I do watch everything or know about everything. Sorry. That is...
Don't apologize tonight. We're all, like, coming out as TV anthropologists.
Oh, I need you to explain this because we've said this so many times. You already heard me breaking the taboo that, like, we actually are admitting that we watch TV, as progressive-minded as we all are, and wonderfully intelligent women in this room.
Well, Nia and I were talking before this show that we need. We sometimes it feels like you need the mindless release.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Yeah, you just got to see the circus, you know. And that's why I watch. I mean, like one of my favorite reality shows is like RuPaul's Drag Race. And it's just all glitz and glam, and just like sometimes it is even transphobic too, you know. And I mean, I still watch it because sometimes I just want to escape, you know. And
how is it transphobic, may I ask? How does that surface?
Oh, I mean, there was that one season. I mean, there for the first couple of seasons, there was they would say like shemale, and you know that word is just associated with like pornography and how, like, you know, through the men's lens. Mm. But there was one season where they played a game, and I don't know if you've seen the show, but it's like certain contestants, they get on the show and they pull this this competition to see who's America's top drag queen, and you know they try to like be women impersonators. Well, one of the challenges that they had, RuPaul had them try to decide which look at a photo basically and see, is this a shemale or a real male or a real female? So that was the transphobic thing that like eventually led to, you know, all of the controversy behind it.
I only know them by the contestants who are on them. Which season was that one?
That was the last, no, that was season six. So no, wait,
I know
yeah,
them
season
by
six.
Alaska.
So like we're on season seven.
Okay. So no. Was Alaska on the sixth one?
No, that was the one before that. It was the one with Bianca Del Rio, the wonderful comedian. And
I started season seven because Pearl was in that one.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I don't know. I watched the cuties. They're so gorgeous. Yeah. There were a lot of really, they were babies on there, though. They were all really, really young.
Well, I mean, like, you know, yeah, they are. I mean, there are older, you know, men on there as drag queens on there as well.
May I ask your take on two shows that are currently out?
Yeah,
that
sure,
deal
absolutely.
With transgender community, Transparent and I Am Kate.
Yeah.
I'd love your thoughts, Nia and Pamela, on those shows. Start wherever
I,
you like.
Honestly, I've only seen one episode of I Am Kate, and that's the first episode. A friend of mine just, recommended the show to me and said you should check it out. Because, I mean, I don't even watch a lot of reality TV show other than RuPaul's Drag Race, right? And Hoarders. But I saw one episode of that, and I think that's great. But for me, I'm a trans woman of color, and when I watch that show, I don't. It's hard for me to connect with it. I mean, the first episode, Caitlin deals with a suicide that happens within the community in San Diego. So she takes her limo and she drives to. She escapes from the paparazzis and she goes to San Diego to meet with the family of the trans kid that. Killed himself, and that was when the show ended. I mean, that episode ended, and it's just hard for me to connect with Caitlyn Jenner. You know, she is a trans woman, but her struggle does not represent my struggle or a lot of trans women of color struggles. You know, we are dying out there, and like the show, it is trash TV. And I do like the fact that she touches it on it a little bit, you know, but I just remind myself it's just trash TV at the end of the day.
It's totally fine, because I'm also going to admit that, I mean, I'm a queer cisgender woman of color, but I did pay attention to, I want to say, the pop culture or the societal conversation around it happening. And yet, I know I have limited time in the day, and I did not feel like I needed to take the entire time to watch the interview and then the subsequent series, because I just thought, I'll just read the think pieces about it. I'm just going to listen to what Janet Mock and Laverne say about this, and I will just pay attention to actual trans women of color talking about their issues. I think it was harder. I mean, I was just thinking that it's good for some people who still have maybe farther to go in their awareness about gender variance and confronting and disrupting and dismantling the gender binary, but yeah. That's not my journey.
I've watched I Am Kate. I'm up
How far
to date.
Are you?
I'm up to date.
Oh,
I think
really?
It's episode 6. And you know, from
that
my
many.
Cis perspective, I in a way, as I watch it, it seems that Kate is being advised and guided by this group of trans women who've come together, people like Zachary Drucker, Jen Richards, Jennifer Finney Boylan, Shandy Moore, Candace Kane, also Kate Bornstein.
Oh yes,
pops in, and these women really hold her accountable and call her on her stuff. And she often on different episodes, she's sitting in circles speaking with parents of trans children and trans women and men, and she's being held to the fire, and she's really showing her. She's new. I mean, she's really is new, and she's exhibiting that she is not even identifying as part of the community.
Right.
She uses them, they.
Yeah.
And she's being asked by her friends to use we, and how tilt, kind of helping her understand how she's coming across. And
yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna shame her for that. And I know a lot of like my trans friend like have, you know, they're like, oh well, she's not, you know, whatever the case be, but. I understand that this is a new world for her, and she's only touched it like a couple of times in the past couple of decades that she's tried to get into her inner self and be herself. And I understand that. So, you know, like that's, I'm not expecting her to like do something so magical that changes and helps the entire community for us. But, you know, that's great what she does now already.
I think there's a lot of expectations on her.
Right, yeah. You know, because she is the one that's supposed to represent all trans women.
I know. And it's surprisingly, is the show on Bravo or E?
I think it's E.
Oh, okay. I have to say, for an E show, it's like E stands for education this time around. I mean, it's really not your average. I'm shocked. It has a different tone than I think people, even her own family, feared that it might have. So it doesn't quite know what it is. It's kind of teetering on, is it serious and really going to go there, or is it still going to you know, are we going to be in Kate's closet for half the show? You know, it's just still not.
Has it been like that?
There are some, you know, I don't know, though. It's kind of actually, again, a cis woman here. I'm like, I hope my family's watching this. You know, I hope people across America are learning. There's a little of the closet, but there's a lot of just her relationship with her family and how the transition's going with everyone in her life.
I mean, that is
and
so symbolic, right?
Community.
Spending that time in the closet and kind of like
she
prepping.
Can.
Yeah. And prepping herself. And I mean, she did come out, but you know.
That's the only thing I saw was the makeup teaser. That's the only thing I saw about I Am Kate.
Yeah.
And the only thing that, frankly, because I didn't watch it, I'm going off on what you told me about it. What struck me about it, at least that felt like something I could either relate to or feel somewhat kind of comfortable about or like knowing about, is that it seemed like that journey about when you are coming out of the closet, or whether it's the closet or not, but you're coming out of whatever secrecy and really dark places that where you're still getting to know yourself, that doesn't happen in a vacuum. And that is very much like a queer coming out that I remember for myself, at least, and for a lot of people, that's their coming into themselves is with the community. I don't really think the ones that don't get to do that with the community, I just feel like it's harder. And if you don't come also into your activism in some ways, it doesn't really allow you to educate yourself in some ways. It doesn't really allow you to examine yourself, because if you're just looking at things in a totally new way from how you, I think we were talking a little bit more about this, about when you're having people tell you you're wrong about your identity.
Oh yeah, definitely.
For so
it's like
long,
policing yourself and your behaviors and your thoughts. You know, I had that all my life, and I'm still kind of getting rid of the residue of that. You know, like the just questioning your because my identity has been in question all my life from an outside source. I always police my actions and behaviors, and only up until recently have I started seeing it myself. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, to go back to the show.
It is that time where you're still learning about yourself, and if that's something that Caitlin is doing and having other people be in on that journey, especially when... I think especially when people need to know about that, as long as it's going to save lives, go do it. You can have 20 episodes. Go ahead. As long as it's saving lives, I'm happy for it to be on E! Or anywhere, honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick musical break. When we come back, we want to talk about Amy Schumer a little bit. Amy Schumer has... we're going to play her song she did on her show, Inside Amy Schumer. It's a parody skit of a boy band singing a song, Girl, You Don't Need Makeup. And when we come back from that song, we're going to talk a lot about Amy Schumer. She gets a lot of props for being a feminist comic. And also, if you dig deeper, you find out that a lot of people don't feel she's quite as feminist all the time. So we can talk about the good, the high points, and some of the questionable things that I think not only Amy Schumer might have to think about, but also comedians in general, that sort of crossing boundaries and lines. They don't like to do that, I know.
May I also say that what we won't talk about is the debate on whether women are funny. So,
we handled that a few shows ago. They are funny, in fact.
I know the show you're talking about.
With Spilt Milk Comedy Collective. Okay, Brooke, are you ready to play this Amy Schumer song? This is a parody from her show Inside Amy Schumer called Girl, You Don't Need Makeup. So forgive the bad song, but it's funny. Go ahead.
Girl, it ain't no lie, just look deep into my eyes. You're perfect and I think you should know that you don't need no lipstick, you don't need no blush, cause you've got that in a natural glow.
magazines say that you're whack.
Girl, don't believe them.
Just leave that tabloid trash on the rack.
Girl, don't you read them.
You're beautiful, and who cares what they think? Now watch that lovely face off in the sink. In the sink, girl.
Girl, you don't need makeup. You're perfect when you wake up. Just walk around.
Soon. With this whole no makeup tune,
you kinda changed our mind on the makeup thing.
You'll be the hottest girl in the nation with just a touch of foundation.
Girl, I can't be seen with the ghost from the rain.
I didn't know that your lashes were so stubby and pale. Just a little mascara and you'll look female. Please listen, girl, what we're trying to say.
Just get up an hour earlier
and you can make yourself much girlier.
I wanna get real with you. I got a lot of regrets in my life. I regret missing my father's funeral to audition for The Voice. I regret being high when my niece was born. But most of all, I regret telling you not to wear makeup. That's on me. But what's on you is hopefully more makeup. See, it's like I tore up the shag carpet assuming there were hardwood floors underneath. But it turned out to be just dirty linoleum. These are just metaphors, girl. But they are about your face.
And I just stopped myself from laughing this entire time. I was laughing throughout the whole thing. This is Pamela, and we are back on Bread and Roses. The show that we're talking about tonight is Feminists Watch TV 2.
And that was a song from Inside Amy Schumer skit. The song is Girl, You Don't Need Makeup. And that was ironic, in case you tuned in and were horrified that this is Bread and Roses. But that's an example of some of the, quote, feminist work that Amy Schumer does with her comedy. And we have a few skits we'd love to talk about. And then perhaps some critique about some areas for improvement for Ms. Schumer in her feminism.
Well, I think, to be honest, I forgot to bring it up to you. I mean, there's some criticism with her, but I think that kind of criticism is really summarized by the kind of criticism that's usually directed at white female comedians, mm-hmm. is that they can make certain jokes or make certain oppressed people the subjects and butts of certain jokes. And it's not something that Amy Schumer is the only person who's ever had that. It's Tina Fey. Oh, wow. Mm-mm. There are some women who do not like her. And Amy Poehler, because of certain things that they had done this one time, it was kind of making fun of maybe low-income women with that one movie, Baby Mama. Just, you know, that kind of
insensitivity.
I mean, you know, you punch up, you don't punch down, right. in good comedy, at least. So that's the only thing that I had to say about that, is that it's not anything new, but I think I am definitely aware of the line to tread, and it's a kind of balance where
I mean, it's such a thin line, too. I mean,
you like, know, to support or not support? I don't know.
Right. I mean, she is a feminist, right? And she's doing things for the cause. But I have also, I mean, I don't really, you know, listen to her comedy. But I've heard, like, other comedian friends of mine tell me that she makes racist jokes and and
about Latinas.
Yeah. And so, like, at some point, like, where do you draw the line? Or should I just not listen to her or promote her? You know, it's just.
But that's how I feel.
It's still comedy when it comes down to it.
Exactly, and that's the thing to think about. You know, comedians, they don't want any boundaries. They feel it's their job to poke holes at the culture, and we've had this discussion. We had female comedy troupe on recently, Spilt Milk, you know, and are feminists funny? You know, there's that whole mythology about women being humorless.
Yeah.
And but I don't, you know.
And I can totally understand it from the other side too, being that, like, you know, like, when you are that person that has been oppressed, you are that person in the audience that's not laughing.
Right.
You know. But it doesn't change the fact that everyone else is laughing. And it's
It's like, how many times are Asians the butt of jokes?
Right,
and
I'm
so sick of it.
Yeah.
And if you couldn't tell by my last name, Santos, I'm Filipino. And it, for some other reason, because I can pay attention, Filipinos also tend to be kind of put in, for some reason, I think Family Guy jokes a lot. I mean, there's so, like, that.
That show's evil.
Well, at some point, I couldn't.
Okay.
There's a point I couldn't take it anymore because how
That's
much...
where you draw the line, huh?
It is. There's just a point. I watch Bob's Burgers now, and they don't do that.
That's a hilarious show, Bob's Burger.
Tina.
Yeah.
Tina. And isn't that a great example of comedy that doesn't have to get really mean? I mean, I just think they're so funny. And the only way that they make fun of people is from outside the family. So they're really, really tight as the characters in Bob's Burgers in that family, in the Belchers. But they only get really mean with people outside of their family. I think that's sweet. So, yeah, that was just my only criticism of it. But I know there are things we want to say we liked.
Yeah, like, in all fairness, Amy Schumer is not wearing a t-shirt. I'm a feminist comedian, you know, and give me props. That's being put on her. But, and she has done some things that I think get the feminist stamp of approval. Like, we're going to have to talk about this in FCC-approved terms.
I know.
But there's
I'm
a skit.
Up to you.
Yeah, use your imaginations. There's a skit called The Last Desirable Quote. I'm going to use a different word here. Desirable Day. The Last Desirable Day. And the skit, very briefly, is Amy Schumer's jogging in a field. She happens upon three actresses having a picnic, Tina Fey, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Patricia Arquette. And they're all there celebrating Julia Louis-Dreyfus's, quote, last desirable day. And they explain to Amy that in every actress's life, the media decides when you finally reach the point when you're not believably desirable anymore. They say you don't get a letter or anything, but there are signs. Like, you don't book an AARP commercial to play Larry King's wife, for example. Or you get a part competing with another woman for Jack Nicholson. And they say, they point out, you know, men don't have that day. Bruce Willis, those guys, they don't have that day. So that was a very funny skit.
No, it's great. I love that. So I love that. And it makes me, what I'm actually criticizing is more about its subject. So that is a great example of punching up. Isn't it? You know, it's here's patriarchy in the media and how they decide what gets to be put out there. And controlling that up to a certain point. I just thought of, there was this, she's in a couple of different things, but her most recent show is Penny Dreadful, Eva Green. She was also a Bond girl. I think she's known, it's pronounced Eva Green. And apparently there was an indie movie with Greg Araki as the director, where she played the mother of someone who's only 12 years younger than her, like an actress who's only 12 years younger than her, Shailene Woodley. And it's supposed to, she's supposed to play this middle-aged, very kind of, very complex. To me, I actually read it a lot as a different Betty Draper. And yet she's only 12 years or less older than this girl that she's supposed to be.
Betty Draper, meaning like a 1950s housewife
yes.
ideal. Okay.
Yes.
Betty Draper's from Mad Men. Folks listening who might not be familiar,
I
she's the archetype.
I need footnotes to when I'm talking about things or someone like trailing behind me and like, this
me.
Is what I'm...
Love you.
Because I do go on a stream of consciousness sometimes with my references.
That's our TV.
It's such a thing where it's all in here. I haven't necessarily made money off of this encyclopedic knowledge quite yet of knowing things, but I will win a trivia game at one point. But I want to leave this kind of a little stream of consciousness to get back to one of the other shows that we were originally going to talk about, and I'm leaving it up to Nia, is Transparent.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Can you give folks a quick summary of what it's about?
Yeah, so it's a show. It's on Amazon Prime. It's 12 episodes. It's so short. It won the Emmys, I believe, right?
For writing? Was it for writing?
I think it won a lot of awards, but I don't know. I tend to watch those shows, and I watched the first episode. I had no idea it was about a trans, you know, even with the title, but I was hooked. It was so good. It was very well written, and it's about Maura, this older trans woman that withheld her transition up. I think she's like in her 60s in the show, and I forget the name of the actor that was played by her.
Jeffrey Tambor. I'm telling you,
I don't
have this in front of me, and I know.
Well, thank you for knowing that, because I wouldn't have remembered. But the show is about Maura's family, and it's about how transparent, you know, their idiosyncrasies are and how they work with each other, and it kind of redefines the idea of family, and it's really amazing. It also deals with this transition of this main character, you know, who's supposed to play the patriarch in the family and has held himself, this is before the transition, from transitioning, from changing, from being herself. And the kids are older, like in their 30s. And it's about how, it's basically about how Caitlin's kids would deal with
if it was fictionalized.
If it was fictionalized, yeah.
Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, Caitlyn Jenner.
It's a fictionalized version of that trans.
Yeah, dealing with the entire family, yeah. Mm-hmm. But on a less, you know, notoriety.
No Kardashians.
Yeah, no Kardashians, yeah.
and no Olympic medals or mm-hmm. other kinds of... I should say this was... So they're going to get their second season coming up. So the first season,
yes.
I want to say, came out, I think... I feel like this came out last year.
Transparent?
So it did, yes.
It did, yes.
So it definitely predated Caitlyn's, even the gossip. And mm-hmm. it's really interesting that, so the creator is Jill Soloway, and originally there were a lot of great things about it, about putting it centering, instead of having it be the special episode, centering the narrative on Maura.
Really?
Right? I mean, I'm just guessing from what you're telling me that it's about Maura rather than the way that I've seen a lot of LGBTQ, and I want to say small t sometimes because that's hardly ever put in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
It always seems that it's someone's friend or it's the very special episode where mm-hmm. the
oh,
other
I know.
People...
I mean, like, do you remember that show Queer as Folk from, like,
yes.
2000?
British and American.
Six. Seasons, and there was never a trans character in that show. Queer as Folk. Never a trans character.
I didn't watch the American all the way through.
I that was my novellas, that was my TV, like soap opera, and there was never a trans character. And this was way before I even had any agency to, you know, who my identity is, and, you know, my way before I even knew I was trans, right? No trans characters. A show called Queer as Folks.
That's pretty surprising. And that's kind of...
And it's supposed to be innovative and, like, you know, like this... And this was released in, like, 2001 or 2002. Mm-hmm. That was only so long ago.
It had a lot of seasons.
So I'm surprised. Five, six seasons.
And then what usually happens with some of these shows is that they... If you do, let's say, a theme or a character, then that's it. You know, you can never have, like, they won't, I think it's very hard to have other shows where they have maybe similar characters, like, because people are afraid of, well, it's already been done in Queer as Folk, or it's already been done in The L Word, or it's already been done here. So I think I'm glad to see that it's being done in transparent. And I think the only thing that's going to make it even better is the one of the criticisms was that they didn't have an actual trans writer at all in the first part of it. But now they, before they got into the second season, they put a search out and they hired trans writers, or at least one trans writer, to at least portray that lived experience on the script and on the screen. And that makes a big difference.
I was actually very surprised that there were no trans writers in the first season, because there were moments in that show where I was like, there's a scene and Moira is out shopping with her kids, right? They're shopping and like they're getting their makeup done at the MAC counter, and time is passing, and Moira really has to use the restroom, and like this the restroom scene, and then she, you know, like her kids are like, no, okay, we'll just use it, and they're at the mall, you know, like we'll just use this restroom right here, and Moira's like, no, I feel really uncomfortable, and she's like she's just starting her transition, so and then the kid, like while they were using the restroom, these women verbally attacked her. So I was just like taken back, and I was like, wow, they really captured that scene very well. I mean, I've that has happened to me before, you know? So
and it can place a lot of anxiety on such an everyday
kind
of issue. Uh-huh. Okay. So that's
And that's shocking. So I'm excited to, you know, hear and see what's gonna happen next.
See, sometimes you can never tell whether the people in the writer's room, whether that is kind of negatively affecting the output in some ways about it. Because I did mention in the interview, so it's True Detective and Game of Thrones. There are some issues about the depiction of women characters, and it's also not a surprise then to know that there weren't women directors for any of those episodes, and I don't think a woman writer for either of them, but definitely not a female director at all. And you have on Game of Thrones, more than half of that huge cast are these really fleshed out characters that you can't even lump them in categories of strong female character. A lot of times in sci-fi and fantasy, you have the Xena warrior princesses and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You have these kind of outliers where they have either superpowers or something that makes them more special than the average woman. And a lot of
times... They're the chosen one.
Oh,
right?
My... Yes!
That's the trope.
That is completely it. And where it's sort of... And it isn't that the point is it's one. There can be only one. So they're the ones that are kind of taking notice. But
that's what makes the show the novelty, right? I mean, like, you join... Well...
No, you know. Because we love talking about kind of these geeky shows that are now mainstream shows. But where they're the ones that are kind of not getting... they don't talk about the people who are still under the oppression, right, of patriarchy. And at least Game of Thrones, they at least acknowledge with some of the depictions about rape on there and about certain people constantly being victims throughout the seasons, that this is what it means to not be the outlier, to not have three dragons to protect you, to not be this queen or that, you know, protected person. This is what it means to be subjugated and kind of at the will and exploitation of a lot of men on the show. So at least, and I'm talking about Sansa Stark on there.
The rape, the big controversial rape.
And it's drawn the line where a lot of people don't want to watch it anymore because
of
that.
And that's surprising me because it's like the rapiest show on TV. And for some reason, this rape got everyone fired up. What about it?
And I kept thinking, I watched Rome, which is also on HBO, years ago. And I was actually more horrified, but there was just, it was all gendered rape on that show, on Rome. And this is supposed to be a fantasy show. So it's not even kind of based. They want to say it's based on history, but it's like made up, you know. Let's just...
Hobbit history.
I love George, I call him George, R. Martin. He did read a lot about medieval histories and such things, but a lot of medieval histories, or really, let's say just any history, you're going to have a lot of storytelling and exaggeration or something. So we can't say that everything is based on fact. This is fact. This is how many times women get raped in history. But I mean, come on. That's a lot of what women in real life now in this day and age that we live in have a lot of that danger and that risk as well. So it's not to say that it's something that is so far removed we should never have it on there, but I think the particular reason why that was a controversy is that they did not show that incident from the perspective of Sansa. It's from, they cut away from it, but you still hear her as it's happening to her, to someone who is a bystander in the room, another male. So it's about actually just enhancing that male character's character arc.
And it takes her out of it. It's completely all about him.
And this is exactly what happened in True Detective also with season 2 with Colin Farrell's wife. It's not about the wife. It's about him.
The male's reaction. Yeah.
And so that's where...
Going back to that male gaze again.
Male gaze, yeah.
I know. So I'm going to have to unfortunately remind listeners to check back on our website for Alice Wong. We didn't have enough time to get our supersized show to get to our interview with Alice, who also is, she has done blogging and live tweeting on the website and podcast The Nerds of Color. They are always covering really great shows like The Walking Dead, Fear of the Walking Dead, and such. Her Twitter handle is at SF Direwolf, another Game of Thrones fan. I want to thank Nia Nguyen, who is amazing.
Thank you for having me. That was wonderful. It was an honor.
Come back.
I'd love to.
Please.
And we're going to end the show by talking a little bit about reality TV. We're going to go out with a song a little bit later by one of the actual Real Housewives of New York City. She has a single out with a very feminist theme called Girl Code. And after years of anthropological research with the Real Housewives franchise, I have gleaned some do's and don'ts if you want to have healthy, positive relationships with women in your life. Follow these simple rules. Don't gossip. Don't repeat gossip. If you do something wrong, own it and apologize sincerely. Don't deflect or minimize. Say stuff like, sorry if you felt that way, or just get over it. And if you do squash something, then really keep it squashed. Don't bring it up again, especially at fancy restaurants or cocktail mixers.
So in other words, don't
flip tables. That goes without saying, Pamela. But yes. Yes. And I thank them for their wisdom. It was not wasted time after all. And we would love to go out with the new hit single from the Countess, Luann de Lesseps, her brand new single, Girl Code, which premiered on the Bravo channel. You might hear Andy speaking in the beginning of this track, but heed her words of wisdom. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Nia.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Nia Nguyen. Thank you, Pamela Santos. This was fun.
This is so fun. And please let us know on Facebook or on Twitter if you want us to do more of these shows so we can actually...
I'd love to do a movie episode. That'd be great.
Yeah. Movies next. Okay, yeah. This will be repeated because there is so much. But thanks for listening and humoring us. And we'd love to hear your feedback. And listen to the podcast at kboo.fm, Bread and Roses.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Girl code! Don't be on the
floor! I'm the type of girl that's always loyal to the end.
Right up 7 o'clock. Welcome to your Friday. My name is Hemi Blue Rhino. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Coming up, it's your Friday edition of the Hard Knock Radio, courtesy of Davey D and the crew. And I thank you for listening. You're tuned into your community-supported station, KBOO.